I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Matt Davis Adams. Welcome back to Parts Unknown, the wrestling podcast that trawls through the WrestleMania archives so you don't have to. This week, we're putting WrestleMania 16, nay 2000, under the microscope, and boy, it ain't pretty. We've got Hoes, we've got Chester McCheeseton, we've got a McMahon in every corner in the main event. Yep, this is by some distance the worst WrestleMania we've encountered so far. It may be the worst 3 hours and 21 minutes I've ever spent with WWE in my 3 decades of watching the product. But I didn't watch it alone. Anton Tolui, Carl Anka, Carrie Dunn, you were all paid to watch this too. Make a sound for how you felt at the nadir of sports entertainment. Oh. Things get off to a bad start. They don't really recover. Normally, we go for like our favourite match or the biggest match first, but we're going to start at the start. Carrie, what did you make of Ice-T and the Godfather's entrance? Hoes start running when they see his car. Grab your bitches.
Pimping ain't easy.
Apparently not. Yeah, we saw the Godfather at Mania 17 being all right to censory. Here, he was right to grab bitches, Carl. It was kind of strange.
Something I found really interesting was when Charles Wright was inducted into the Hall of Fame, he was inducted in as the Godfather. And then I had quite a big discussion with my friend on the, right, okay, I can understand he's in the Hall of Fame based on longevity and what he's done. Surely you shouldn't induct him as the Godfather, as the pimp. And then he responded, well, what else you put him in as? The racist Papa Shango? The good father? I was like, oh, these are all... He's played a lot of bad characters, hasn't he?
And he's quite proud of it because he owns a strip club, doesn't he? Cheetahs. That's his day job. Yeah. We don't need to talk too much about the match against Bull Buchanan and the Boss Man. D'Lo Brown was Godfather's partner. Boss Man recovered remarkably well, having been hung by The Undertaker a year prior, which we'll talk about next week. I want to talk a little bit, Anton, about Bull Buchanan. He's one of these random characters who's going to pop up that people might not know too much about. Once B2, Cena's lackey. He was just a sort of big dude who was there for a bit. Have you got anything more to add to that?
He looked like Phil Mitchell trying to be in The Shield. Didn't he, really? He was kind of agile, like he could jump up to the top rope like that, but then when he was on the top rope, you'll see one of the worst, and I think, yeah, isn't this match one of the worst sorts of fall from the top rope onto your thighs and make it look like your balls you'll ever see, because he kind of just stumbles along. Yeah, he was awkward in the ring. He was always someone's lackey and was just this unit that was just there, but no one ever really wanted him there.
Not the worst thing about this, but I thought Ice-T's performance was pretty rubbish. Pimpin' ain't easy, pimpin' ain't easy. Just change the tone of your voice, man. You know, you're supposed to be singing or rapping. Just put some enthusiasm into it. You're being paid a lot of money.
This is Ice-T in 2000 as well. I was chuckling to myself because Ice-T now does CSI Cyber. So, yeah.
And feuds with Katie Hopkins.
Yeah, yeah. It, on Twitter. I'll say... WWE will never understand hip-hop or rap music. So when it does pop up, it's just bizarre.
So it started badly and then it went downhill.
I don't think I understood prostitution either, though, to be honest. So.
Yeah, it was weird. So Boss Man and Buchanan win. And then the Godfather's clients, his employees, Scarpa. And then that's the end of it.
Also, they're obviously Big Boss Man, Policeman, kind of, you know, sort of security element and that kind of thing. They've been builders. They've got no sense of humour. No, they're stopping an illegal profession from taking place in the ring, mate. How are they the bad guys? What's going on?
Luckily, after this, we went on to the enthralling catch-as-catch-can clinic that would have made Luthers and George Hackenschmidt proud. The hardcore battle royal, 15 minutes, as many title changes as were necessary, about a gazillion. Well, 9 in total. Some real Hall of Fame bound guys in this. The Mean Street Posse, Crashing Hardcore Holly, Funaki, Viscera, the Headbangers. Carrie, the Mean Street Posse, remember them? They were Shane's mates.
No, I don't. I literally sat here on Wikipedia for this entire match going, I don't know who these people are. I don't remember them.
Two of them were Shane's mates. One of them was a wrestler, basically. They came into the company to bleed. Pete Gass and Rodney someone?
Just Rodney.
Yeah, Pete Gass and Rodney. They bled a lot in this match. A lot of people bled in this match. It was pretty gross.
It was awful. So I love a gauntlet match. I think a gauntlet match is one of the best ways you can introduce a title to product. So you'll be like 20 minutes, six minutes, or we have this many competitors. Whoever is the champion at the end of it is the champion. But it's entirely broken. Like, there's a very early on, Crash Holly is pinned by Taz. And then rather than everyone go to attack Taz, there's just the bit where 6 or 7 people are outside on the edge of the ring just beating each other up with kitchen trays. I'm going, no, Taz has the title. Beat him up. You need to beat him to win. And the ring psychology is all broken because no one is attacking the person with the title. Even in the dying seconds, it's only really between Taz, Crash Holly, and Hardcore Holly to get the title. I'm like, do you not understand? You have to tag that guy, not just beat each other up over the head. Nothing happens.
Did you enjoy the bit where Taz went for a pin, even though he was the champ at that point?
Yeah, I quite enjoyed that. I detest Hardcore Holly. I cannot stand him. When I was a child, I hated him, and then grew up, and I found out loads of things about how he hazed all these rookies and is just a general repellent human being. So I can't stand him.
You can see it in the match. He's getting involved, and there's a moment where when Taz is pinning and he's supposed to break up the pin, and he just starts booting Taz for no reason.
Just kicks him in the head in the middle of Taz going for a pin, and then doesn't begin a fight.
No, just walks off
to like break up a pin. Just kicks him out. I'm going, you're disgusting. I hate you.
He was involved in the end. How botched was this end?
They massively fucked that up, didn't they?
So Hardcore is supposed to be pinning Crash after he smashes him over the head with a jar of candy.
Yep.
And they kind of mistime it and it doesn't quite work. The announcers don't know what's going on. The ref's not sure. Neither man is sure. It was the perfect end to a match like this, wasn't it? Just fucked up.
It was an utter mess. None of the match made sense. The ending didn't make sense. The referee didn't know whether to go and get the belt, who to give it to at the end of...
So I'm assuming... So what happens is Taz has Crash Holly in the Taz mission. Then Hardcore Holly runs in, smashes Crash Holly over the head with a jar of Snickers, goes to pin Crash Holly. The 3 count happens. Now, when I watched it, I assumed the 3 count happens after the end of the 15 minutes. So Crash wins the title, but simply because he escaped, because as JR wonderfully describes him, as the Houdini of Hardcore. Crash Holly's thing was, I may not be the biggest or strongest, but I can escape all these very weird things I've put in for the 24-hour rule. It doesn't happen within a time limit. You get Crash run off with the title. Hardcore's just sort of stood there going, no, I've won the title. There's also the fact that JR thinks Crash Holly kicked out. You know, this is repellent. Give Crash... the title.
But the ref's also doing the streak out over Taz, so he can't quite put his arm down because Taz's thighs are too big. Absolute shit show, isn't it? Let's be brutally honest.
I sort of wonder if this is worse than what we've seen before. TNA versus Al Snow and Steve Blackman with Chester McCheeserton. TNA test an Albert. Test somebody we spoke about last week. Albert, also known as the Hip Hop Hippo at one stage in his WWE career. Now the King Dinger down at the Performance Center, the head trainer. What was going on here? Somebody dressed as a cheese, Carrie, like a Swiss piece of cheese, I believe it was. One of those ones with holes in. Funny.
No, not funny. Al Snow is terrible. Was he ever good?
No.
He's terrible. He's awful in the ring. He's awful as a promo. And he just gives me the creeps, and I don't like watching him on my television.
I think he's an NXT now. Is he not?
I don't think so. I'm going to say no.
He was.
He was the trainer on Tough Enough, wasn't he?
Yeah.
There it is. That's where I'm confused. Yeah, he's in that perfect, I was a mid-carder, and now I'm pretty good at teaching other people how to wrestle. But in terms of what he brought to the product, no, I was entirely baffled as to why there was a cheese. I was entirely baffled as to why they beat up the cheese afterwards.
Oh, the whole thing started with Al Snow in a toilet.
Talking to the cheese.
But then apparently the cheese was taking a massive dump because the whole toilet stank and Steve Blackman wasn't happy that Al Snow was planning something silly. And
yeah.
And then obviously the match started with the ring walk, which was just basically a camera shot of Trish's breasts.
Yep.
And then cut out to TNA.
Producer Ben researches these shows thoroughly, and he's pointed out that Steve Blackman is now a bail bondsman in the central Pennsylvania area, so he is basically the repo man.
Yeah, I wouldn't mess around with
Fact
Blackman
of the day. The personality vacuum, but he could kick you quite hard, I would imagine.
And he'd once beat up JBL, so thanks, mate. I got really confused while watching this match, and I was thinking, this is the first WrestleMania, when we're watching Reverse Chronological Order, where there's also WCW product. So I thought, oh, what are their rivals putting out at the same time? They had Spring Stampede with DDP versus Jeff Jarrett. And I thought, that's why this Mania isn't quite singing, because they don't care. They're that far in front.
Well, in terms of the card, we got 9 matches at WrestleMania 2000, and only one of them was a singles match, and that was the 2-minute catfight between Terry Runnels and The Cat, logically involved in a catfight. That match only slightly longer than Val Venus talking about his ejaculate and how many times he'd produced it that day. Carl, do you want to revisit your Mae Young theory? We got some classic Mae stuff where she was putting a jumper with a cat over the cat's cat.
Yep. My note just said, oh, wow, that's just the naked woman. The Attitude Era sucks.
So that naked woman was pixelated. Was she pixelated on the WrestleMania that went out?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think they could have gone full muff, certainly, at that time.
No, not them, because there was clearly side boob and things that was pixelated.
She was in a nude suit at the time, and I believe around about this point in time, Channel 4 used to air free pay-per-views, and it was around about this point in the Attitude Era where Channel 4 was getting too many complaints from Ofcom, because while these pay-per-views were being broadcast with a 30-second delay, there was too much female nudity and too much suggestive sexual content.
Too much Tess and Albert.
Yeah. Eventually it got pulled from Channel 4 and moved on to Sky 1. So that's why in Mania 17, I think JR says hello to our UK viewers in Sky 1. So this is it seems like this that made wrestling stop being free in the UK.
So the cat would go on to marry Jerry the King Lawler because there's nothing
She's
weird about that.
She's a lucky, lucky lady,
yeah,
isn't she?
Yeah, and then she got the Spanish Archer. He quit. They divorced months later. He came back again. So we've got the cat to thank for having Paul Heyman on commentary at WrestleMania 17. So her legacy in wrestling, it does extend to something.
Okay, so it gives us that. I mean, I think the thing that makes me laugh most about this, of many things that make me laugh about how terrible this was, is the fact that they actually precede the entire match by saying, well, neither's very experienced as a wrestler. Now, well, why are they at WrestleMania then? It's just terrible. And then the fabulous Moolah is there to make it all even worse.
At least so wrong about Mae Young.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Gary was very kind to me when I first said I think Mae Young's in the joke. And she just gave me a very gentle look, and then that 3 WrestleManias later, I just realized how wrong I was. Awful. Val Venus. I know Val Venus is bad. I know Val Venus is not a child-friendly star. I cannot stop laughing when Val Venus is doing anything.
Were you around for the choppy choppy or pee pee bit?
Oh yes, I was. That was a bad storyline, wasn't it?
Our friends at Kai and Tai with their manager, who it was around the John Wayne Bobbitt time, wasn't it? They were trying to cash in on that by saying they were going to cut off his penis. Yeah.
Val Venus is an odd one. Now he talks quite a lot about legalizing weed. Val Venus is one of the very few male superstars who seem to... No. Was partway through that sentence and I realized I was talking nonsense.
Yeah, let's not talk about Val Venus anymore. Let's talk about some quality matches. Well, we'll do that next week. We got China and Too Cool versus the Radicals, and Kane and Rikishi versus X-Pac and Road Dogg, two kind of throwaway matches. Not much to say about either of those. Who would like to explain to our younger listeners who the Radicals were, why they had that gimmick, and when they came in?
The Radicals were a quartet. Quartet?
Yeah.
Quartet of technical wrestlers, so Perry Saturn, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko, a quartet of technical wrestlers in the cruiserweight, light heavyweight class of wrestlers who left WCW near the end of WCW's run for reasons of essentially we're sick of the old NWO people getting the main event and we're going to go. Move over to WWF. There was a very, very iconic shot of all the Radicals in the front row of an episode of Raw.
Dreadfully dressed, all of them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they were, yeah.
And they came over as part of a, not quite invasion, but essentially just the stable of we're amazing ring wizards and we're here in WWF to just improve quality of the four. Eddie Guerrero was the most successful. Chris Benoit, we will not talk about him too much.
He was separated from the other three quite quickly, yes. Wasn't he, Benoit? Because he was, even though they all got jobbed out in their first matches, Benoit lost to Triple H. He was seen as the golden boy, and Guerrero got injured really early as well, didn't he? So he missed a fair bit of time. They brought him in with Mick Foley, was kind of, he'd brought them in. That was the storyline thing. And then they turned on him, went with Triple H, got kind of WWF'd. But yeah, I mean,
Dean Malenko wins the light heavyweight title, which would eventually become merged with the cruiserweight title. Perry Saturn was always seen as a number two, eventually gets backstage heat and is saddled with a terrible gimmick with a mop. In the way I described previously that some wrestling matches are terrible at the sign-off, or they're all amazing in the ring. Dean Malenko, Chris Jericho says Dean Malenko is one of his favorite ever wrestlers in terms of feuding with Dean Malenko is his top, he's in his top five opponents of all time. I think it's Ultimo Dragon, Kenny Omega, Dean Malenko, I think, and then Angle.
But he had no personality, no. Did he? That was the problem. No with Dean Malenko.
Which oddly became sort of fun because he had what I call anti-charisma. He's so boring. It's very fun putting a very intensely interesting person next to or around him, which is why him next to Eddie Guerrero and Eddie Guerrero next to Perry Saturn wearing a stupid hat is very, very pleasing to me.
Perry Saturn, an interesting one, Anton. He went completely off the radar, didn't he, a few years ago? And there's a really good episode of Jericho's podcast, actually, with him, where he describes how he basically got heavily addicted to crack and became homeless and was living with a woman and she died and whatever and had this horrendous time. But he's kind of turned it around a little bit now. It's really sad when you think that of the Radicals, there's Dean Malenko and everybody else is either dead or had major, major problems in their life.
Yeah, and it's really weird to think that Saturn's the forgotten one in the ring and he's kind of the forgotten one now. He's not even the most famous of the tragedies.
Oh, goodness.
I mean, that's, you know, guy can't get a rub, can he? But I think, to mention it's Radicals versus Too Cool in China, this was China's match. So we talked last week about how China won the title at WrestleMania 17 against Ivory, but this was her going in the ring, beating up the lads, you know, first rejecting the advances of Eddie Guerrero and then, you know, showing him what she can really do. This was China's match. This was her at best.
And I find it really weird watching this and knowing that it then takes nearly two decades for them to start doing the whole women's revolution evolution thing, because you've got China here. She's a superstar. She's hugely over. She's getting a huge reaction from the crowd. She's got men in the ring that will work with her. Why does it then take you 20 years to realise that your female talent can do this? I mean, if you compare it, well, not compare it, to the cat fight, no one in the crowd really cared about that. The crowd is surprisingly dead, bearing in mind what that is. And if you're arguing that all a wrestling crowd is interested in seeing women as is titillation, you're not doing a very good job at that. But you are getting a great reaction from your female talent actually working. So what is wrong with you, WWF?
Carrie and I had a discussion in regards to intergender wrestling a couple of weeks ago when Ellsworth was in the ring and Asuka soundly beat him up. And I said, intergender wrestling always made me feel uncomfortable, and Carrie very nicely made me talk through my stupid prejudices. And essentially, I never got awkward watching, I never felt uncomfortable watching a China match in intergender wrestling, because China was never, ever, ever portrayed as anything other than utterly capable, which I think is a problem with a lot of WWE product, with a lot of how they put forward a lot of their women superstars. China is legit, and it's never, ever put forward that she is not the smartest person in the room, or not the strongest person in the room. And a large reason why DX worked is because China was their enforcer. And like the idea that she was the enforcer. China at the time was also getting mainstream crossover appeal. She was appearing in Third Rock from the Sun, which was Emmy-nominated sitcom at the time. And again, in there, she was very much like, oh my God, look at China. She's the most attractive woman in the room. Attention-grabbing. And there is a tiny part of my brain that makes me worry that it's taken so long for them to sort things out now, because the first person to do it was China. And they didn't ever take her seriously, so therefore they didn't ever take what that person brought to the table seriously. It's that, oh, I'm very, very concerned that it's one of those, oh, yeah, well, my ex gave me all these very important things, so because they were my ex, I'm just going to throw them away immediately. Well, I'm like, no, listen to the pop.
I don't know, though, because we said last week about the way that China was kind of sent off and saying, look, here's your award, here's your championship belt. Cheerio, thanks very much. And I think that's kind of a nod of respect that you don't often get if someone's leaving on acrimonious terms, because you know what WWE are like. You know what Vince is like. They want to kind of humiliate someone, even if they're going on reasonably good terms. So I don't know whether that's whether what you say is strictly true. I don't know.
The reason that the women's evolution, revolution, or, you know, women's wrestling has taken so long for it to be kind of promoted in the right way is because WWE and a lot of people watching feel uncomfortable seeing women get beaten up. They can't handle it. They can't get their head around it. Even if it's other women beating up other women in sort of the legitimate confines of the same way as the men, some people can't get their head around it. And WWE for a long time couldn't get their head around it. And it's interesting where you see the likes of Kairi Sane and Asuka, who before they joined WWE were in some of the most brutal mixed gender matches I have ever seen. And they've said, I want to be in this match because I want to show I can take as much of a beating as anyone else. And I want to show, you know, and the storyline needs me to get beaten up because, and if I come back and I, you know, come back and beat them up, it works. We're still nowhere near that. And so what do you do? Because WWE will still say society isn't ready to see that. So you either have a parity where, you know, people beat up everybody because, you know, that's what happens in the ring, or you have a storyline where, or you don't have the storylines because they're terrified of anything looking like domestic violence.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In terms of highlights, we do have some, Gary, on this show. Hardys versus the Dudleys versus Edge and Christian. The Triangle Ladder Match, as they called it, the precursor to TLC. This was the first one of this kind. They would spend the next 18 months trying to perfect it. Again, as we spoke about last week, lots of terrifying spots, but something that you can enjoy knowing that everybody's alive and with full use of their extremities.
So far, yes. It was good. I mean, obviously I was watching this straight after having watched the next WrestleMania, which I'd watched previously. Yes, I kind of got myself a little bit mixed up in my head, though, because I was kind of thinking about what happens at the next WrestleMania as well. And so I was getting myself a little bit confused. But yeah, this is a good match. I like watching Edge and Christian do this stuff most, I think, rather than their single stuff. And I like the fact that the Hardy Boys, as we said previously, Matt is not in the greatest of shape now. And I like kind of watching this, and as you say, knowing that they're all kind of still alive and intact at the moment. And it's kind of seeing them at the pinnacle of their work. And yeah, this is a good match, but it's in a terrible WrestleMania. And by this point, I was just thinking, I want all this to be over.
The other thing I like about this, Axel, is that is that all six of these guys are still, and in some cases, like Christian loosely, he's got a podcast, but they're all still involved in the business. There's no sort of disenfranchised, embittered, old, grizzled veterans here. They still love wrestling. That's nice.
Yeah, but I think these guys started as fans, so they didn't sort of, these aren't cross sport people, or you know, these are the guys that went to the indies or went to ECW, or you know, these are the guys that just did it for the love of it, and hence why they were in this kind of match early on. I don't think the crowd are entertained, but I don't think they realized what they were seeing at the time. This was going to be the precursor for a genre of match which would dominate WrestleManias for the future. This was a crucial point in WrestleMania history, this match.
It was, but then you're kind of looking at it, again, we're looking at it with hindsight. It's kind of a baby step into that. It's not quite there yet. And also, I think it's interesting what you say about them starting as fans. I also get the feeling with these guys, they've always been in control of what they do in their careers. They've not been under kind of Vince's thumb too much. They've kind of stepped back when they've needed to. They've rehabbed injuries when they've needed to. They've gone and ridden motorbikes in a really dangerous way when they've needed to, if you're Jeff Hardy. And I think that's also given them that kind of longevity.
There was another pretty good match on this show. Triple threat, Chris Benoit, Kurt Angle, Chris Jericho for the IC and European titles. The Euro Continental Championship, as Kurt called it. Good story with the two belts. Some decent work, as you would expect. Everyone goes on to bigger and better things. Another weekly shout out for Kurt on the mic, his backstage bit where he's talking to the security guard about protecting him from women, children, babies and dogs. You'd be surprised, a lot of dogs come up to me too. It's like, oh, I love that guy. Shout out to Jericho as well, referring to Kirk Angel. That was always one of my favorite things. In terms of this WrestleMania, this is like a 6-star New Japan classic, but was it good? Was it not?
It was okay. I mean, I found the kind of two fall thing quite weird. I just find that a really weird stipulation and a really weird match structure.
So explain that to people who haven't seen it, how they did it.
So the first fall was for the Intercontinental Championship, and then the second fall was for the European Championship. So it went on straight after the first pinfall, and yeah, it was just a bit strange. But
the purpose of that presumably was so that Angle could have the get out of having lost both belts without ever being pinned.
Bob, yes.
It's Bob Backlund's fault, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it was, yeah.
It's all Backlund's fault,
it's,
yeah.
It's very unsure of itself as what it wants to be as a match. It's a very poor triple threat based on the personnel in it. And it's got the same thing that is throughout this entire WrestleMania. They have weird rest holds and weird amounts of selling and very odd dead moments of time where I don't know if it's because someone's missed a cue or if the cameraman hasn't quite worked out how to hide whiffy punches right now, but it's the entire WrestleMania has a very slow, plodding pace to it that I don't understand at all. What is this WrestleMania?
I always think it's interesting as well when you see superstars relatively early on in their career and see which moves stick and which ones don't. So this time, Jericho's winning with a lion's soul. Edge is putting, you know, is when he's in singles or when he's in normal tag team matches, is using a spear, but it's just a normal move. It isn't his signature move, it isn't his finisher move. And you think, you watch the lion's soul, it looks great, but it doesn't look painful, yeah. Does it? And you see, you know, you see Benoit getting, you know, shoulders 3 count, and you're like, well, tap out. He's just landed on you. Tap out. Come on.
Just kick him off.
Yeah.
Here's a question for you, Anton. We're saying that this wasn't maybe the greatest triple threat match. Wade Keller, the American wrestling journalist, is big on WWE having a year where they have no triple threat, fatal four-way, no nothing. You can only have singles matches, tag matches, three-on-three, so equal, you know, number of people in a tag situation or just a one-on-one. Is that something that WWE in 2018 would ever have the patience to see through?
No. You need a variety in your product. Otherwise, it's the same. Otherwise, you know, you're just feuding against the same person or the same people all the time. You need to break things up. You need to be able to infuse feuds together at some point. You need to be able to almost end a feud like you have with a sort of Money in the Bank, a natural end to feuds, and kind of, you know, people kind of go off in different directions afterwards. There's too much programming. There's too much for it to have one-on-ones, two-on-twos, three-on-threes. You can't have that in the current state of WWE, in my opinion.
But, okay, well, let's spin back to 2000, where we are now. Mentioned it, Carrie. Nine matches. One of them is a one-on-one match. You can go too far the other way as well, can't you?
Yeah, I mean, the problem with WrestleMania is they always want to get as many people on the card as possible. So we saw last week with our 19-man gimmick Battle Royal. They want to get people on the big stage for the payday and the DVD sales afterwards. So, you know, your WrestleManias, your big pay-per-view events are always going to have your odd matches where you're throwing too many people in just because you want to get people involved in some way.
But should WrestleMania not be the carrot of, if you work hard and have a good year, we will put you on WrestleMania, not, you know, you can just go on in the job of Battle Royal or whatever?
It should, but the economics of wrestling is broken. You know, there's no union, there's no bargaining thing. This is Vince's way of being nice. And two things I think a couple of things we're learning as we go through WrestleMania backwards. Kurt Angle's the GOAT. Undertaker matches aren't as good as we think they are. And also, the Andre the Giant Battle Royale was a really good idea.
Because, like, it saved us having this kind of thing.
This sort of weird mid-card stuff. There's a lot of matches in this stretch of Attitude Era WrestleManias where the feud is a week, maybe 2 weeks long, maybe even that night set on the episode of Heat, which is basically their pre-show of just, all right, there you are, there's a match, these two people hate each other. Because there is a weird, you know, Vince Russo, whether he's in the company or not, there's a weird car crash element to stuff, which when it works, works well. When it's not edited properly, it's just, what's going on? This is entirely baffling.
Let's go on to the main event, which was significant. It was a four-way. It's the first ever WrestleMania where a heel won the main event. Who would have thought that would be Triple H, eh? Just shocking stuff. So it was Big Show, who had Shane in his corner. Triple H, who had Steph, logically, in his corner. The Rock, who had Vince. And Mick Foley, who had Linda. Why is there a McMahon in every corner? Well, I'll tell you why I think why. Whenever the ratings are in the toilet for Raw, they bring the McMahons out because we are told that that is what the network thinks draws viewers. So is that just the catch-all excuse? Hey, we're good for ratings. Linda equals ratings.
it's just peak Attitude Era excess. This should have been Triple H versus The Rock one-on-one for the title. Those are your two biggest stars. This WrestleMania has no Undertaker, no Stone Cold. So your two big stars are Triple H and The Rock. You have the storyline about how they've fought all the way up the ranks, fighting for the Intercontinental title, whatnot ever. You've got your face, you've got your heel, go for it. But it's just needlessly complicated. I was watching this going, this is a terrible fatal four-way. And then thinking about further, when has there ever been a good fatal four-way? NXT has a particular...
SummerSlam 2017?
Yeah, that's about it. NXT,
that was brilliant.
NXT has a couple for number one contender matches and SummerSlam. But other than that, Fatal 4-Ways don't quite work in the same way that a triple threat does. And I have no idea why. I'm just going, why?
Carrie, you know what a Mick Foley mark I am. He admitted in one of his 13 autobiographies that he basically came back here for the money, having retired a couple of months earlier in a great Hell in a Cell match with Triple H. We got the awful sight of him trying to do that flying elbow onto the table, missing it completely. He said afterwards, the first thought in his head was, I don't think I'm going to make it to Disneyland tomorrow. He should have just said no to this, shouldn't he? He should have said, I don't need the extra whatever it is, 100 grand that badly. Or is that just not financially responsible to your own family? Do you have to do it? Because you'd get a lot of money for that, wouldn't he?
He would have got a lot of money for that. But I don't know. The entire thing, you kind of watch it and you think, well, Big Show and Foley are not going to win this. Neither of those two are relevant or germane to this match or story. Like Carl was just saying, it's about Triple H and The Rock. You've just got these superfluous two people there for the payday and there for the McMahon partner. It's terrible.
You said it, but then the two guys who were front and centre and of the company at the time, Triple H and The Rock, they couldn't even put each other through a table. It took two attempts for The Rock to go through a table after Foley missed.
I like that, how Foley missed and then Triple H went up to do it to sort of cover from Foley.
And messed it up.
There's a bit where Triple H has a chair and then goes to strike The Rock, who's holding still steps. So Triple H's chair connects with The Rock's steel steps and it goes into The Rock's forehead. And that just sums up this main event, just excess and nonsensical violence.
The line the JR comes out with, Jesus criminy! Because you can tell he's about to say Jesus Christ and he clearly doesn't want to be blasphemous on the air. So just goes, Jesus criminy! Like, that's a phrase.
I think the best example of that was Kurt's constant use of Cripes or Frighty. Takes some beating. At what point, Anton, in The Rock's presidential campaign will his opponent bring out the footage of him beating up Stephanie McMahon at the end?
Well, if they've got any sense, day one. I mean, it's still odd. You still hear the references to taking people out to the woodshed and things like that. You're like, oh, someone had a troubled childhood, didn't they? It's still, like Carl said, excess, nonsensical violence on all quarters, isn't it, really? The only one that sort of avoids it's Linda. So, because no one wants to... No, that's the line. No one wants to see Linda get hurt. And she went into the Trump administration, so, you know...
It picks up a little bit when it becomes a triple threat. And JR gives an amazing eulogy for Mick Foley once Mick Foley's pinned. But it's so bad. And last week, Matt, you were talking about would it have been better if you had The Rock and Stone Cold in different eras? That's your answer. Stone Cold's not there anymore and look how everything's just...
So it's this mania with Vince...
Turning on somebody who he's... Yeah.
Happens again the next year. Really? Is this like? Do we need this pretty much the same ending to two manias as well? What is the point? So when you see Vince McMahon in the ring with a chair, we know what's going to happen.
It was really flat. I remember watching it at the time and thinking, because I'm a child, I'm upset that the bad guy won. But it wasn't that, was it? I mean, Carrie, if you can put your finger on why this show as a whole, not just the main event, was such a stinker, was it the absence of Austin and Taker? Was it the booking? Was it the McMahons?
I think it's a combination of all those things. I mean, for me, I guess, watching this as a whole in one sitting, just watching it from the start, and I was just like, the whole Godfather thing, I'm just like, I'm not going to enjoy this. I knew I wasn't going to enjoy it. You've set the tone for what kind of show this is going to be. And it was, and it didn't really pick up after that.
Amazing, Carl, that a year later we got WrestleMania 17.
Yeah, just this is so plodding, and the main event of WrestleMania 17 is rapid. Which I'm assuming is the entire locker room going, what didn't work last year? Oh, okay, hell for leather this year. Attitude Era WrestleManias are interesting because they don't build through WrestleMania in the same way that they do before or after. It's just very much Vince Russo just going through script after script after script after script after script and having those interconnected elements, which, again, when it works... great, because everyone's got at least two things going on at the same time. When it doesn't, it, as Kevin Nash once described, it's like ordering a pizza and getting a shoe. Yeah, you're surprised, but you're not going to order from that pizza place again.
But also, I mean, you look at, I mean, we had SummerSlam recently. They had 11 matches, and the bill was stacked. So if you weren't in on the main event, there was something lower down you really wanted to watch. On this, you know, you look at it and you're like, actually, what would I have been excited about? If I wasn't invested in the main event, what match would I have been invested in? And it's your biggest show. There should be things you should be looking forward to.
And there should be variety, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Not just multi-person matches.
Exactly. I think that's what WWE's clearly learned now. But at the time, it was all just throw everything at it. Just throw everything at it because people love violence and carnage and boobs. And that's effectively what it was.
And some people do, you know, in that order. Do you have a WrestleMania moment, Anton?
It's the end of the ladder match where you've got Edge kind of standing on the two ladder, on the two tables connected across the ladders. And you've got Christian, who is clearly just a mess and broken and can't quite get his moment with the belt, standing up next to Edge, which I think sums up their entire career as well.
Carl?
It's the video game. WrestleMania 2000, the N64 video game, is the video game that got me into a lot of WWE. So I was a WCW baby, get to eat, and then one day went to my friend's house for a sleepover. He hands me WrestleMania 2000. We did the 30-man Royal Rumble where you pass the pad when your guy gets eliminated, and it's that No Mercy, Here Comes the Pain, and other video games. This one, the WrestleMania was terrible. The game that came out of it is transcendent.
Gary, I know you'll be really cross that Carl's taking your moment, but if you've got another one.
The look of revulsion on China's face when confronted with the prospect of a sexually aroused Eddie Guerrero. It's just an amazing facial expression.
I wish Jerry Lawler didn't scream Latino heat repeatedly as well. I can't pick a WrestleMania moment from this. It was rubbish, but maybe Kurt Angle saying that dogs really like him. I think that sums up the show quite
JR
nicely.
JR describing Rikishi as having challenging cheeks.
Right, next week we're all over WrestleMania 15 strapline, the raging climax. This is a weird company, isn't it? 35 seconds of Butterbean versus Bart Gunn in the Brawl for All, Stone Cold versus The Rock in the main event, and our first meeting with Owen Hart. It'll all hopefully be much better than what we've had to watch this time. Follow us at the PU Podcast or individually at Anchorman616, Carrie Sparkle, Sky Anton, and at Matt Davis FC. We'll see you next week, right back here in Parts Unknown.
The Parts Unknown Wrestling Podcast is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.